Senate Commission on Healthcare Access and Affordability. The date is June. What is the date?
Second.
Second. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for being here. I see Mary Beth, Julie, and I have been appropriately separated per Dr. Wopat's admonition. Anyway, we have a large agenda and an important agenda in front of us. Again, I want to echo the remarks that I said last meeting, and that is, and I think I speak for all of us, I think we all felt it. We all sit around a lot of these tables and get the same intent, but not the intensity and commitment. And last meeting, I think we all kind of caught fire in terms of what this group can do. And again, I want to recognize Carl for his eloquent remarks that really helped spark this thing. Having said that, I am working feverishly on an issue important to us all. Not in the electoral process. I want to be clear about that. So I'm going to have to excuse myself on a regular basis this meeting. And so what I want to do is hand the gavel over to my august co-chair, Alan Bates, to take us home on this today, and apologize for my regularly scheduled exits from this. Every hour on the hour, I've got to go make a phone call. So. Anyway, I appreciate all of you being here. I will be here except for about 5-minute absences. Appreciate it. Thank you. Dr. Bates.
Thank you. Are we actually gaveling yet?
Yeah.
Okay. I want first off thank everybody for coming again. I know this is a huge commitment of your time and effort, and I do appreciate that. And I want you also to know that we are... Part of the discussion today will be future meetings. I want to get right up front that while we initially said we're not going to meet in July and August, and my sense is through talking to several of you that we're not going to do that, we're going to have them meetings in July and August, one each month. And we think it's important to continue to go forward with what we've been discussing, and because I feel we've really got to kind of steam up, we need to keep that rolling. We're losing 2 months, so we can't afford that time. And so we will be meeting in July and August, and we will be talking about that date later on in the meeting. What we'd like to do first is get some updates as we do at the beginning of each meeting from the other groups that are involved in healthcare and issues being involved with them. We'll hear from them first, and then we'll get into what we're going to try to accomplish today. As always, it's going to be a very open meeting with a lot of input and help from all of you. None of you have been shy about speaking up, so I don't think we'll start now. So let's go ahead and roll forward. Well, who's here from the
Yeah, just a couple housekeeping things real quick. For anybody at the table or in the audience, if you've not signed in on the front and got to have a visitor badge or been approved, please make sure you make your way back there and sign in. And second, we will have a working lunch at 11:30 again, sponsored, and compliments of Kaiser.
Thank you, Mary.
And last, we did have a microphone glitch this morning, so we had to take one off the table. These pick up pretty good, but please speak up and be aware of that. And this morning, then, we do have updates from the Oregon Health Policy Commission, Nora Leibowitz, and then Medicaid Advisory Committee, Dr. Janine Smith. If we don't have too many chairs here, they're going to have to probably just maybe stand over here, somewhat near a mic.
I'm going to sit here.
Yes, I am Nora Leibowitz from the Health Policy Commission, which is located within Oregon Health Policy and Research. Just quickly, the Health Policy Commission is the organization that develops and oversees health policy and planning for the state. We identify and analyze significant health care issues affecting the state, and we make policy recommendations to the governor, also to the legislature, and to health policy and research. our current work, which is should be familiar to many of you, is to develop some health reform proposals and draft a report for the governor. Toward this end, we've been meeting monthly. We had a meeting in February with a number of the groups that are working on health reform proposals in the state. And in May, we invited Alice Burton, who's the director of the Robert Wood Johnson State Coverage Initiatives Program, to come and have a discussion with us about what other states are doing or what efforts have been successful and what else is going on nationwide. So I was going to give you some highlights from that conversation. One of the things that we talked about was that when you're creating a product that is targeting employers, it's really important that that you're gaining the employer's trust. Particularly, employers are often concerned that state-organized projects begin with some funding and then later become the responsibility of the employers, and that's a big concern for them, obviously. The idea is that sustainability is as important as coverage. We talked about some of the things that don't work, including limited benefit programs, because people often will not purchase them when that's a requirement. And narrow, small-scale programs that really involve a lot of administration but don't cover a lot of people end up, for obvious reasons, being a lot of money for not a lot of output. We also discussed some unintended consequences of the state efforts out there. And one of those is in New Jersey, some regulatory changes to the individual market, particularly community rating and a guaranteed issue, led to an implosion in that market. So we talked some about the pros and cons about different types of rating and guaranteed issue versus not doing that. In addition, we talked about purchasing pools that don't have protections and the fact that this can sort of lead to adverse selection that unintentionally creates a high-risk pool. And that can be an issue here in that our high-risk pool is currently shrinking. And part of that is that young people who might buy into coverage don't see an incentive to do that because they're healthy and they're not seeing a need to buy coverage if they don't need it. And this is obviously skewing the risk and drives up the premiums, which then makes it more difficult for people who need the coverage to afford that coverage. One other note was talking about using, we talked a lot about whether to build on existing programs such as the Oregon Health Plan, and one of the things that Alice talked about was that if you're using existing Medicaid programs the way that, say, New Mexico or Arkansas have, the program really needs to be attractive to the marketplace. If you're going to ask people to buy in, it has to be something that they want to buy. And then we also had some discussion of reform options and started identifying what we've been calling building blocks for reform. Some of the ideas that we discussed include employer and individual mandates, whether we might use one or both of those in our recommendations, utilizing a Medicaid expansion, efforts for cost containment and increased quality and transparency, and capturing cost savings that might be due from reducing the amount of uncompensated care, sort of bringing that money back into the system.
Mark, you just made some simple prepared and complicated work, and maybe briefly the good for the
sure. Sure.
Individuals, that's the thing.
Yes. A lot of this came out of what's going on in Massachusetts. And the Massachusetts plan that's currently in process includes an individual mandate, which is in Massachusetts, it requires that everyone in the state buy health insurance as long as they have access to an affordable package of a reasonable package. Now, those two words, what's reasonable coverage and what's affordable, haven't yet been defined fully, so it's still up in the air a little. Janine and I did talk to some folks who were involved in the Massachusetts planning who were throwing around a figure of around 320, was it, at PMPM. So that may be sort of a ballpark for that. So the idea in Massachusetts is to say everyone is responsible for having health insurance and everyone has to participate in the system. And their goal is to help reduce the cost of health insurance by having everyone, including healthy folks who might not otherwise join or young people, into the pool, and that would ideally bring down the rates for everyone, including folks who have higher needs. An employer mandate, the one in Massachusetts, is a somewhat limited mandate in that it requires that any employer with 10 or more individuals employed by them have either coverage for their employees offered, or that they pay $295 per full-time equivalent employee.
For a year.
And that's a significant difference, $295 per person per year versus the cost of paying for health insurance, even if you're not paying the full fare for the individual.
Last question, too. Mm-hmm. There was some discussion about whether or not if your employees are utilizing the room to a regular basis or a higher basis in some way of your facility and filling back to your employer. So is that in the bill?
Yeah, in the Massachusetts bill, if the individual is not insured and they start using a lot of services at the emergency room, for example, that there was a mechanism for not only making the individual responsible for the cost of that care, but also their employer. And the goal of the $295 per person per year was to offset the cost of uncompensated care.
I understand that, but can a facility go directly after the employer on these issues?
You know, I don't know all the details of how.
I believe so. So.
Now, I'm not sure exactly how it's going to work, but I know that in the legislation it does say that they will be held responsible for part of the cost.
Mary Beth, you know more about it?
No, but that's the case.
That,
are you talking about how they do that?
Well,
is that the question?
Where the devil really is? If you have a method, if you have a situation where you can't afford to elect not to insure your employees, and they start utilizing ERs, and you can't even go through the ERs, those are pretty big bills real quickly. And if that's really got some teeth, that's a heck of a problem. That's going to even look that scattered by the insurance from the face. Insurance like bills from the hospital that I can't predict how often. So that to me is a key point. I don't know how serious that is.
Nora, my question is, I want to make sure I understand this. If you have an employer that is electing to pay the $295 annually for FTE, if he's participating in that program, will he be held responsible for any ER room expenses?
My understanding is that it's non-participating employers.
Where I'm not understanding.
I think part of it is that
the one to tens, maybe.
Right. Yeah. That they have exempted the smallest employees, and part of that is they've said, okay, well, maybe you're going to say that you can't afford the $295 per person per year, and it's more of a roll of the dice.
But the 10 or more rule exclusion or exemption. Or, I'm sorry, cutoff. That would not preclude an employer with fewer than 10 employees from choosing to participate?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've got two questions. And if the $295 the employer is exempt from any cost of information being used, that's a significant cost.
There's been several things written on the rulemaking process to the bill that. The devil in the detail is still being worked out at this point.
Right.
Yeah. I'm
sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no.
A very big point. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
A different question, and that is, if employers are currently paying a higher rate of coverage for their employees, and are they locked into that once the plan goes into effect, or if they can't go down to the skinny or the minimal $295?
Well, obviously, any employer could decide whether or not to pay for insurance. The $295 doesn't pay for insurance.
I'm not paying for insurance fee. Okay, so they could decide to no longer provide coverage and then go to the 295 option.
If they felt that they were in a situation that was not competitive with other employers, or
I'm sorry. Any other questions?
Yeah.
There's more than one benefit package in that program, and I wondered if we talked about that at all in the context of, you know, our traditional suspension system, single tax.
Well, this is the way that they've set it up is that for individuals who are up to 100% of the federal poverty level, those individuals would have access to Medicaid. And they have a strong managed care program in the state, and so there are a number of Medicaid managed care providers that those individuals could access through. For individuals who are above 100%, not up to 300% of poverty, those folks would be able to access through providers who are not a non-Medicaid package. What the details of exactly that package looks like haven't been decided, but they're going to allow managed care organizations to come in and offer health insurance to those folks. And those individuals will have subsidized costs, so they're not going to pay the full fare. Above 300%, people will be expected to pay the full amount.
The 100% to 50% similar to our FIAP program?
Yeah, in the structure
employer, of employer employee match, federal and state one, something of that nature.
Yeah. Yeah, and it would include getting federal match.
Right.
And that's a part of what makes the program possible.
There.
Yes. Yes. And I should.
End up, please.
Kind of, but I thought I'd let Nora finish, and then maybe she'll answer my question before I ask.
Oh, I was just thinking I should point out that in Massachusetts, they had some existing money in an uncompensated care pool. They were using this money that was Medicaid matchable to pay for services directly, and they went to CMS and said, we want to change how we spend this money. Instead of using it directly for services, we want to use it to pay for health insurance. And so having that money that could transition and be matched by the federal funds is key to providing health insurance to all these new people. I don't know if that was where you were going or what.
No, I have a separate question, but I wasn't sure if you were done with your overall.
Well, to sort of, I guess, to finish up on the issue of the mandates, the Massachusetts plan does include this mandate. And as many of you know, that when the legislature included this mandate, it was vetoed by the governor and then overridden by the legislature. So it is in the it's in the works now. And one of the things that we talked about with Alice Burton in terms of mandates was that when you have a program that doesn't have mandates, such as the program in Maine, it's often difficult to get individuals who don't see themselves as needing health insurance to participate. So the Massachusetts program really has stressed this idea of that it's been described as individual responsibility or as everyone participating, whether or not they see themselves as a target for needing insurance. It makes it a community responsibility. And that's, we talked about that idea in Oregon in terms of the effect that would have. Particularly, I know that last month you all talked some about what would happen about emerging markets and some of the work that was done didn't assume any kind of mandate. And there seems to be a real difference in terms of whether you say we're going to have health insurance that anyone can buy into and not make it a requirement that everyone buy in versus saying not only can everyone, but everyone has to in terms of
if you make it voluntary, who's going to join and what their costs are. Obviously, the costs are going to be higher if you make it a voluntary program on a per-person basis. So, I guess that's the end of the Massachusetts part. Did you have something more about Massachusetts?
One thing that might be helpful for this group, and I think is, and I think Alice may have talked about this at the Health Policy Commission meeting, but the politics around getting this passed and how did they bring people to the table. I don't know that we want to necessarily do it, but I think the whole issue around bringing people together and how did they move on such a massive reform effort might be helpful to this group.
They do have a Republican governor and a predominantly Democratic legislature. And there are certainly some political ramifications, both within the legislature and the governor's interactions, but also Massachusetts has a quite strong healthcare reform community-based set of organizations, and one of the things that was going on is that they did have a group that had put forth something for a voter initiative that had a much stronger requirement on employers in terms of who was going to be funding healthcare for people who were insured through their employers, and that group promised to take a step back as long as something else was passed by the legislature, and that did have an impact.
Nora, with regards to business, I think initially my take on the mass bill was business initially bought. The incentive was the possibility of mandated health care funded by a payroll tax. That's what brought business to the table.
Right, and that's what I'm talking about.
Right. And I'm wondering if you have a sense or if you have any information with regards to employer participation. Through the Governor's Small Business Council, we're beginning to hear from Oregon business here. If I'm currently providing health care insurance, and we're paying anywhere from $450 to $500 per individual and $650 to $700 per couple, an employee and an individual, will I be able to drop that coverage and pay $295 a year and pick up coverage for my employees? That's huge. We're already in the report that I made to the Governor's Small Business Council, we had businesses present there. This took place in LaGrande. This is the sense that we're starting to the people, absolutely.
How did Matt
address this? I'm sure it had to come up.
You know, I don't know the details of how they dealt with business response. I do know that it's become a bigger issue with employers of individuals who are less skilled or less highly sought after. Because as much as businesses would like to drop their health insurance, I think that they may, to some extent, be kept from doing that in areas where they're competing for employees.
Yeah, I mean, just to clarify, the businesses that don't provide health insurance now would not provide health insurance then. They just pay $300 a year. $300 a year doesn't buy you health insurance. It's just the workers have no health insurance. So I guess I don't understand. You're not buying into a program.
What's the incentive for employers not to drop coverage?
Right. Same thing that exists now. The reason employers provide coverage now is they have the same reason employees provide coverage then. $300 I don't think offers much of an incentive either way. But there is no buying into the program. $300 does not provide health insurance.
Okay, so that's
just a penalty.
The other thing that we need to remember about Massachusetts, and I think most people probably know now but may not, so I'll kind of reiterate some things. They have a different environment for their health care back then. Hugely different. A large number of very large employees, high-paying jobs, a very rich state. All those jobs are government-driven. Okay, I would say that we're sending money to Massachusetts from this state. We're a donor state. One of my pet peeves. Secondly, company, their Medicare reimbursement is 50% higher than ours. They're one of the highest Medicare reimbursements in the country, and we're the lowest. So that cost shift on the business isn't in Massachusetts. So I would expect that their premiums that they're paying are probably lower than ours, because business here in this state is subsidizing Medicare and Medicaid. I would also suspect large businesses, not being large business states, can withstand those premiums better. Their uninsured population, I think, was
500,000.
Might be worse. A number of large in the state with twice the population and much richer. So they're looking at a real small segment they want to get into. They have a federal mandate they've agreed to do it, or they lose money. Business is not interested in coming on board because things are going okay. But they were forced to work with the very reason you're talking about. So that's kind of the way I saw it playing out in Massachusetts. And unfortunately, we don't have those factors. So we're going to have to go about this ridiculous. On the other hand, I believe business state is saying to us, we can't afford these premiums anymore. Massachusetts may not have had them. We may have big business to handle, but we can't afford these premiums anymore, and we're looking to the state to give us some relief. Work a system that works better. So I appreciate the businesses coming to us on the smallest voluntary basis. The case from our school is not totally voluntary. At least you're coming to us saying we're willing to work with you. And I appreciate
that. And I think what the good thing is, Senator, is business is starting to ask, where is that tipping point when they're at anywhere from 9 to 11% of operating costs? Where do you finally reach that tipping point? In some cases, one of the things that we're beginning to experience is where business is starting to say, I can't afford this coverage. Here's what we've been paying for your coverage to date. Go buy your own insurance.
And the employee may say, I can't buy it for that.
They're not
and then the whole system tips. So we lose the commercial market. We haven't got a Medicare market that can support itself. And then the whole system collapses. So Oregon, a leading state, it has to deal with this position. Other states may not feel as much pressure as we do, but I think a lot of the states feel like
that. Sorry to interrupt you.
Just to go quickly back to what the Health Policy Commission is doing. As I said, we've been working on these building blocks for reform, and our next step, particularly at our next June meeting, is to fill in some of the details beyond these building blocks, to think about what do we think about using the mandates, how would that work, how to expand on Medicaid versus utilizing these programs, including items such as maintaining a safety net and identifying and patching holes in the current structure so that our efforts to improve things that don't leave people behind during that process, and other delivery system issues. So that's really that's where we are now, and we're continuing over the next couple of months to fill in what we want our reform efforts to look like, and we're working on drafting a report that will go to the governor.
Thank you.
Have you looked at any state-subsidized reinsurance pools like Helping New York?
No, we haven't really looked at the New York program.
I think New York sounds like an oxymoron.
Hey.
Oh, sorry, Bruce.
I got a problem with that.
Easy.
I haven't looked at it.
They've got a couple hundred thousand people.
Any other questions?
They've got a couple hundred thousand people in their pool. And, you know, in a state like New York where there's, 20 million people, it's not much bigger than our current 20,000 in PL.
You know, I handed out an NCSL document that described different state efforts, and Health New York is one of the increases. So if you set up a document, you might take a look at that, or I can just send another one.
Susan?
Has the commission looked at models other than insurance models? Have you spent much time talking about certain people between Medicaid and Medicare and any other models like the payer?
We haven't really talked about the idea of a single payer program or an all government oriented. I think most of the discussion has been focused on what's both politically sort of most likely to fly with both the governor and the legislature, and also what is feasible in a five-year time frame.
Is there another hand up there?
Yeah. Can you set out what the building blocks are? Have you seen that?
It's actually just although it may be in our, I think it's in our May notes, but I'm happy to.
I'm just thinking, you know, we're going to talk later about guiding principles and this group.
Well, I have them. I have them here, and I'm
trying to do that.
Yeah,
that's why. That's why. Right. Why are you here? We want a really good building. We want people on path for this group. And what I'm fearful of, I'm saying this, if we have to legislate the assembly in January with five plans, nobody goes in. It's just a week of business. You're listening. What I'm hearing is we're on very similar discussions, very similar tracks, and ultimately, I think the position is close.
That is a question. Yeah, there's a place to get the building blocks.
Yeah, and I'm happy to give you to Rick as well, so he can make the description.
Rick. There has been discussion around the difference between insurance model and an assurance model, and that there is a certain group of services that should be assured, and there is a certain group of services that are assured against. And I think that discussion has happened in several places. So we use that. Certain services that clearly are beneficial to assure people, every person in the state. And there are other services that need to be catastrophic people need to be assured against. And I think that we sometimes get confused and mixed up. We think about insuring for immunization or something like that.
From our good resource people in the back, and think Mike might speak your issue. In Massachusetts, there is the $200-some, but then there is a certain anything over, I think, $60,000 of EDU expenses, and they do go back to an employer, so the employer can get gigs for certain expenses, if that wasn't clear.
So the employer has to be hitting the ERs for at least $50,000 before they're.
Some formula like that, something I'm sure it's formulated out, but
well, it's too good. I've seen ER, but it's under 20 grand. Any other questions?
I very recently heard, and again, I haven't had a briefing in my organization in Vermont, as long as we're talking reform. And I'm trying to pick up what is it, if anything, that Vermont may have recently enacted.
They had a fairly aggressive children's program, and they did look at sort of the block grant approach to their to get more increased flexibility with the federal government by taking the block grants. And that's the last I'm not sure if there's something new in the last couple of years. They did just start to really look at it, and because they're asking me to see the paper that I'm doing. Yeah, but they have also, and I think it's less like Maine than like Massachusetts, but more aggressive.
Any other questions? I have one last one for you. You mentioned something about the Medicaid and getting people to buy in. What are you talking about there?
Some state efforts have included, historically speaking, Tennessee has done something like this. But one option for the reform is to build on the Medicaid program, not only for very low income, but also to offer a Medicaid program, but without the sort of Medicaid benefit package, and utilize the managed care organizations and the state administration, and allow people to enter that. But instead of saying it's the minimal cost sharing that we had with the traditional Medicaid population, you can purchase and it acts particularly for people who may have some income through their employer but not have access to insurance and may find individual insurance coverage difficult to get to them. That they could get that Medicaid package of benefits but not be a Medicaid eligible in terms of how the how federal government is.
So an individual buys into the program.
Yeah, they would pay the premium.
Premium to be going through a managed care plan. And that's when it's approved and put in our trial basis.
Yes,
that's
the benefit of that is that there are existing structures that you wouldn't have to get something new. That the managed care plans are already administering these products and that it's,
the state administration as well. That is, again, very similar to PIA.
Except that the instead of having to stay fund outside insurance programs, you
can fund the program. Okay. Any other questions?
Just one thing on that point, Senator. So with the other states that have done this buy-in option, because it's something that anecdotally we've talked to business folks about, uninsured individuals, et cetera, and this whole concept around buying into the health plan, particularly if we talk about the Oregon Health Plan at 2002 benefit level, that it's quite compelling to them. My question is, let's just say the package of benefits is $295 a month for the OHP 2002 payment. Does that money, like if that's me, I buy in for either myself or employees, does that money then get matched?
Depending on the income of the person. If they're,
let's say they're not normally Medicaid eligible,
so
but we're going to buy into some new and special program.
If they were over what the state approved to get back, I don't know.
The bottom line is they're buying into the state program. Okay. We need to move on. Any questions?
I'm going to hand out a one-page summary of the Medicaid Advisory Committee completed their recommendations for the governor on the Healthy Kids Plan. I think last time we were here, they were in the midst of some community meetings. They went around the state to about 6 to 7 communities. Oh, that's where. Sorry. And got some public feedback. Had people think about where to kind of give them some guidance on making these. There's a full report available on our website, and I have the link on the top. But just real briefly, they, of course, want to go to 12 months continuous enrollment. They would recommend no period of uninsurance because they feel it's really important for kids to stay covered and get covered. They felt that there was no need for an asset limit for the children's family, and that health status, that they should be able to enroll without any sort of assessment of whether they were, too sick or too long. They want to make sure there's an aggressive outreach effort and want to be sure it's appropriately funded to make sure that we get the kids, especially since we know that there's 60,000 kids already eligible for the current program. Trying to maximize federal match as high as possible. And that we would utilize the current existing systems of what's available in Medicaid, the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, and a new state-sponsored sort of pooled product that might be available for those who wouldn't have something in the employer realm to access. Cost sharing should be minimal, and that to try to build on the current existing delivery systems, and coordinating all the objectives to try to make this sort of simple amongst all these programs, and that we would make sure that there wasn't a shift out of employer-sponsored insurance. So just very quickly, the recommendations have gone to the governor's office, and the programs are starting to look at sort of the nitty-gritty details of this to try to come up with sort of a better pricing of what this would cost and sort of the, what other things maybe that the recommendations don't quite cover and may need to be addressed. And so trying to fit into the guidelines of the state system of getting legislative concepts in and the governor's budget building process is underway as we speak.
So there's some a little bit more work groups going on, trying to, you know, how will this be exactly administered? So where do we need to pick the pots of money? And what will that pooled product exactly cost? And if we do commercial rates, so our actuary is doing a little bit more work for us on that. And then how is this outreach effort going to work? How would we really want to partner? We heard a lot in the community forums that out in the communities, they know who to reach and how to do it. How can we partner with them and use their expertise in making that happen? So those three little pieces are sort of being sorted out right now as we continue to finalize sort of what the whole thing's going to look like.
Is there coordination between what you're doing, what the governor's doing?
Very, very similar.
Is there coordination between them?
I can't believe how the legislative concepts are pretty. The only difference is that we've been having in our committee regarding the assets test. There's strong feelings from certain members that there should be some kind of assets test, although we are only one out of, I think, there are only three of us in the whole nation that have an asset test. So I left that in our legislative concept. But the outreach, the period of enrollment, and I've been sharing the legislative draft. Rick, is this done yet? I mean,
Probably Monday.
And it follows just very, very similarly. And the governor knows. I've been working with Aaron and sharing what's coming out of our committee, and we want to make sure it dovetails. So it's not like there's any competition here. We want to make sure that we will be able to work out the particulars once their legislative concept comes out and ours, because the goal is the same. And so I'm quite excited about how this is progressing.
Any other questions?
Senator, has there been any discussion in your committee around a funding mechanism or at the governor's office, other than maybe the tobacco tax? But are you kind of waiting to see what happens with the ballot measure, or is that not even in the...
We haven't... It is a topic of discussion, but at this point we want to know what the numbers are. If we don't know what the program's going to cost, it's sort of hard for us to know what direction to go for funding. So that's really what we're waiting for. And I know it's in the DHS and legislation.
Thank you. You have a question for myself. Have you gotten to the point of really having a good discussion about the federal poverty level food program?
We, at least from our committee, is up to 300%. And anything over 300%, they will need to pay full price, I think. Is that how it is, Rick? I forget what the latest draft is that comes out of that.
Well, we'd allow probably the state to make some determination about the sliding scale at 300, I believe.
And prior to 300, are you utilized by FEOP?
Yes. FEOP is... We want to keep, at least our committee, wants to keep the system as it is. We don't want to really create anything new and feel that it's going to be more cost-effective. We really want, I think the system in the Office of Insurance Partnerships, that new one. I feel, as some members feel, that they have done a very good job in the outreach piece, in developing the outreach piece, and we sort of want them to take a lead at this point. And I don't know if that upsets DHS or not, because they already are starting to have the infrastructure already.
One of the components there, too, that was just introduced that's not been fleshed out is the wraparound also for kids who might be insured but underinsured, maybe lacking certain benefits, that we want to introduce in the concept and vision, something that could be give the state some latitude to maybe assist, subsidize, to bring kids up to a benchmark of OHP that might be an important sponsor right now.
Also, I just remembered, we do have some cost sharing by families of
above 250 or above 20%. I'm afraid I don't. So there's a little bit, 250. So there's a little bit of cost sharing from 250 to 300, but then after 300, we have full premium being paid by us.
From the government's point of view, have you tried to define the benefit package to extend sustainable OSP or just move forward right now?
The governor in his initial remarks was that he wanted it as comprehensive as the current OSP plus, and that he wants to ensure that kids are getting the full package deal, that they're getting dental and mental health and medical care.
Has there been discussion from MAC about supporting the ballot initiative?
They haven't really spent much time discussing the particular ballot initiative. They've mostly been very intensely focused on the governor's direction to them to try to define some recommendations for the public.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Thank you both for coming, and we look forward to seeing you at our next meeting. Okay, what should be next question? Early July. Not probably after. As you know, Ben Westman and I, Senator Westman and I, chairman of this committee, and we go back and forth each meeting. And this is Ben's time to be the chair, but he's out on other business, which I think, as far as I'm concerned, doing God's work today, he doesn't do anything in terms of elections, and he just didn't want anyone talking about it right now. He'll be back in and out. Rick, you suggested last time that we go back in and look at our principles carefully. I'm out of order again. No worries, please. Sorry. Hey, I'm here. That was Norwood. Sorry, Rich. Norwood, Dr. Richardson is, as many of you know, is an area of expertise, amongst others, is mental health. And he is deeply involved at the federal level and is kind enough to bring back to us some minimal reading material for me. I can't wait to get into this tonight. The speed readers are going to take me more than 3 months. I'd like to have you share that with us. Those of you who are providers in healthcare in the state, those of you who have been involved in mental health treatment, realize that our mental health system, I believe, is the first part of healthcare system treatment. We do not have a comprehensive plan. We don't have wraparound services. We don't have an effective way to do mental health. People at the present time, and for the most part, are being recycled for medicine. Many are in the criminal justice system and in our jails. We have turned our back on mental health, drug, and alcohol because of the recession. In the last 3 or 4 years, we have actually, in the midst of a meth epidemic, decreased our spending on drug and alcohol treatment. We have decreased our spending on mental health, and as a result, we are reaping Holocaust almost what's happening in mental health in the state. In Southern Oregon, as an example, we have for 30 years had one part of the hospital dedicated to mental health patients who are seriously ill, who have a psychotic break. We put them in the hospital for 4, 5, 6, 7 days or whatever is necessary to get them back on medications or to deal with the problems. Some of them have to be sent to state institutions, some have to be found for long-term beds across the state. There is a consideration in Southern Oregon right now to close that room. With people coming to the emergency rooms in Southern Oregon to meet hospitalization, would then be shipped to other parts of the state. Ultimately, the entire system would collapse if that started happening. That is just an example of how poor our system is working. Commonly, people leaving emergency rooms are told to go to the community mental health. They give them a 1 or 2 week prescription for medications, but they have no way of buying them out. And they get recycled to them. So that wonderful news.
Well, yeah, that wonderful news. I'll start by saying that I hope that we all can accept the fact that there is no comprehensive health without the inclusion of mental health. I think Dr. Senator Bates would agree with me that much of what we see in general allopathic medicine has mental health components to it. In our last meeting, I promised that I would go back and test the resources available to me, at least, from the feds, largely based on my role as a federal commissioner for the President's Freedom Mental Health Commission. One of the problems we have with the results of that commission, which really was harder hitting than many expected, when we said that the system was dysfunctional, it was broken, it was basically revolutionary enforced. You are getting
a lot of reading.
Yeah, where your tax money is going. And at a federal level, they produce a lot of paper. I think, though, that this, especially the big blue and the people are looking at the Google eyes, is the Surgeon General's report. David Satcher was the Surgeon General when this report came out. It was the first time that the Fed sanctioned the idea that mental health was very important and then tried to explain why it was. And David, who's in fact, I'll be receiving a call from him this afternoon regarding his continued efforts, but was the Surgeon General that brought out that report. That report was the basis of our continued work on the President's Continuing Commission. So I thought, for those of you who do not have it, it's just a good reference spot because it includes all of the data, the perspectives that the Surgeon General has for mental health as a public health issue. Then you've received an executive summary plus, I think you'll have two of those because you're printing some of them off. And you have in this packet on your table the summary of the subcommittee reports for the President's Receiving Commission. Now, the problem we have here is that these reports were, if I gave you all of the full reports, each of you would have a stack about a foot high. But in those individual subcommittee reports, they were very, very specific. With data, with recommended federal, state, and local legislations and policies. We were so specific and so hard-hitting that the White House has frozen them. And the President will not let them go. I went to the West Wing and talked to the domestic policy advisor at that time, Margaret LaMontagne Spelling, who's my Secretary of Education, and I asked Margaret to release those. I was told just last week when I called once again that they were concerned about the impact of funding if these were released. It might give people ideas, really, that on how to do it. I still am after the one on Medicaid, so I called. You'll see a small synopsis here of Medicaid policy options. Dennis Smith, the current CMS director, sat on that committee, and I know Dennis, and he basically invited the states to be very creative in their approach to Medicaid for exceptions. And in that report, that subcommittee report, we had some fairly, insightful ways to go about asking for those exceptions. So last week I called Dennis, and we were to meet face-to-face on behalf of my team, Oregon, to see exactly how bold can we be. Unfortunately, he's going to be on vacation when I'm there, so we have a phone meeting next week, and I will, again, see if we can fly the full report out of the White House, or at least get from Dennis some direction as to how, as we look at reform, we might, how bold can we be? What do they mean here? He heard all of the arguments for mental health, and it is a reformist, I think, quietly at CMS. So I will try to get that and bring that to you as well. But I don't think I'm going to get most of the reports in the fine detail out of the White House. There is one other that I found that I thought might be interesting, and I have not read it in its entirety, called Medicaid Financing of State and County Hospitals. We wanted the IMD exclusion. For those of you who don't know what that means, it's the Institution of Mental Diseases exclusion that says that Medicaid will not fund our state hospitals. And that was, of course, around the issue of not wanting to have the hospital too bigger. But we know there's another reality there that excludes the state hospital from a source of funds when they do acute care, especially, and has left us with these situations that Senator Dr. Bates was talking about. And I don't think we'll ever get that. I've hit that one too. I tend to try to tilt windmills and often get caught up in the blades, and I certainly did on that one. So there's nothing I can do about that. But anyway, that's the material that I promised I would bring forward. Obviously, you can just read through it at your leisure, and not all of it is that. But I think it performs an excellent background for our discussion of mental health in the context of health care reform here. Thank you.
Thank you. We are looking at major cost drivers for health care, and we cannot afford to ignore mental health. From my perspective, the two biggest single cost drivers for our difficulty are high tech, overutilization of high tech, and our failure to deal with mental health. Mental health is not just a problem for emergency room, it's a problem for people who are being placed in our institution. It's also a problem for every practitioner and every healthcare group because it drives so much of their healthcare costs. People who have anxieties and depressive disorders, let alone the chronically mentally ill, drive other healthcare costs heavily. And so we're going to have to deal with this committee also. Bruce.
Alan, just the only comment is it drives more than healthcare costs. And I think you have to look at it in even a larger perspective. Certainly, what we know is that, you know, mental illness and substance abuse are untreated are what's driving our a lot of what's going on in child welfare. It's driving what's going on in our criminal justice systems. It's driving expenditures in schools in terms of children who, either because of their untreated problems or because of their family stress, aren't in a position to learn. So I just think that to look at this, the costs are far greater than within the healthcare system. And I think it's that kind of an approach that we've got to start to look at.
And I just amplify what you just said, and that is also the third lens of if you want to talk in terms of framing issues around economic development and workforce issues and employers, absolutely. Think of, and I've been a first-hand experience, the first volunteer leader I worked with and glanced at this big report, Nellie Fox Edwards, the cost in the workplace to employer and employee in terms of lost productivity, et cetera. So just wanted to add that additional lens to the cost here.
And I would, and that's exactly right. That's one way to get employers' attention when you talk about the economic offsets of not. The criminal justice system is a huge one. A large percentage of those folks, I see them from telehealth, have a diagnosed mental health issues that are attended to, you may have forget at their incarceration. I have a meeting in 3 weeks with Regina Schofield, the Assistant U.S. Attorney General for the United States, on the issue of how can states participate with the federal government and what advice, monies, et cetera, can the federal government give us through the Justice Department to specifically address this problem. And she's been around a while. She's enthusiastic about how we look at it. But it is an intricate web, to say the least, but at least they are thinking about that. But we want basically U.S. Justice Department at the table when we talk about mental health.
Well, Nora, I'm going to be kind of unfair to you. Any other questions first? No, I'll be unfair to you. We're going to have to, in this commission, deal with specific parts of the system sooner or later. We're not just here to discuss and debate and get educated the next 9 months. We are going to be able to make the next 90 days come forward with legislation. And I'm going to ask you to be tasked to bring to us, to this commission, what you think is the most reasonable approach, comprehensive fashion to deal with mental health, drug, and alcohol in the state. You have a great background knowledge in this, and I know you're doing this for action here in this country. We appreciate the discussion and the responsibility coming to this. But we also know that the state funds and all the federal funds through the counties various programs across the state, and they're all very different. There's no continuity. There are best practices in some areas, not in others. It's a very confusing system. We know that we do not want to put people in our state hospitals perhaps or captive. For one reason, it's not good for them. Secondly, it's incredibly expensive for us. $200,000 to $300,000 per year, including untaxed money. There's lots of issues here, and Norwood, I'm going to task you with bringing back to us, as members of this commission, your best estimate of what will be best for them to find roughly, you know, where our funds are available for these. I just think we can do better than we're doing. It isn't taking more funding. But to give us an idea of what that system is looking like. We started this conversation 2 years ago, 3 years ago now. And you were part of that conversation at that time with Senator Westman and I. And we were meeting up to the evening, night after night, talking about what wraparound services look like and what a contract program looks like. I like to think that program.
It is comforting, and I accept that, although radio trepidation is difficult. I know it's difficult. But in the end, it's going to require political will at more than almost anything that much I can say. And there are some able people in this room who will be helping me. And Angela Kimball, that's the assistant. Helping me. And we will bring that to you with our best effort.
Thank you. We're talking about 60 days or 60, 90 days.
Oh. Now, I'd rather have a 2 week vacation than before that. I'm
going to case for you back. And we have to start narrowing down some time sequences on this. So we have the concepts we need so we can start legislative action. We can't wait to talk to you.
One comment, and I will keep coming back to it, which was, I want to be very careful and not separate health from sections of health. That we have created that, and we can probably get rid of it if we think about it. Pardon me. Let's talk about health care in all its aspects. So as an organization, as a group, how we write things, how we say them, how either moves us towards looking at health in its entirety, or keeps us in where we are now, which is my view that there's a difference between different parts of health. Follow me?
I'm sorry, you completely. Yeah. Dr. Richardson, I believe Dr. Wolf had just volunteered to work with you.
No.
I call it anyway.
Misunderstood.
That's what I heard. But I do think that's reflected in the principles.
Yes.
That's how we manage that. Right? Make sure that works.
And I'm not a building carve-out. I never have looked at it.
I think most of us don't. And we had the very reason what we were talking about this one, the discussion that was so useful was, is affect all of health care, all of society.
Is the charge include substance abuse? Speaking of,
yes. Other questions?
Because of an austere budget, we weren't able to make copies of all these materials for the audience. But there's one page handout back there where you can get everything online, or it tells you we can order some of the bound copies. So that's available.
I mean, once we get through reading these,
there'll be a test at the end of the
semester. We just have a reading group, a new book club.
It's not an open book test either, so. So that's a great segue, thank you, into Daddy Kitchen. And Rick, you brought this up to us last meeting, I appreciate that. We have found at other times when you start getting down into dealing with specific issues, that at times you go back and say, what are we really trying to do in the big picture here? I have these nice principles that we all agree to, and that we have to have in front of us at times, and we learn these principles can be really helpful. And so we want to take a few moments here to look at sort of a compilation of what we have done previously about guiding principles, have a discussion on it, and they need to add something, they need to subtract something, and there's something that they all agree to and feel comfortable with. And I'd ask you to just take a moment to read through it and ask questions and make comments.
If I might direct you to it, there's the duplicate is on the flip side. The underlying part is simply to show that what was added from the last draft for, I think, the King's comment and concurrence. So the underlying is just to show addition. But nothing else has changed from the last version outside of that.
I'm sure that was the letter going on. I cheated on you guys. I assume we've all had a chance to read this before and see if these issues can't be now. Are there any questions about this document? Is there anything that's concerned about?
I do. One thing. I think it's great, and I started out sort of, the temptation is to either add a whole lot more or wordsmith or kind of get it down to the 3 or 4 pithy principles. I think it covers a lot of territory. I think it's great, and I don't know that I should spend a ton of time wordsmithing. Mm-hmm. I do think it lacks one piece, which is it's all about health care, and there isn't any. There's no emphasis on health, mm-hmm. And I think that's got to be somewhere here, and it's I think. Implicit in a couple of places, but it's not explicit.
I felt the same way, but then I reread the document. Please, I think they just bullet down, but may not be emphasized either. Because that's one of my concerns as well. There is a role to play for individual health and behavior. That's where I found it. So I just think it needs to be strengthened.
Yeah, because I thought that, I saw that it focused that it, well, it's the individual's responsibility for health. And the rest of us, we're responsible for health care. And I think it's that it's together we're all responsible for health. And there's an individual piece of that, but the all the other pieces have to have a responsibility for that.
Who's in your position, and I think I understand, agree with it. When I was talking about delivering health care, funding health care, we're trying to produce health.
Yeah.
And that is a little different that lies behind it, but together it is.
I think,
our goal is
that's our outcome.
Our goal is to produce health.
Yeah. Rick? I see comments back to a recent one. The underlying word says basic service, which should include access to mental health treatment and other critical services. I'm trying to figure out how to say that without using those words. And basic service. A couple ways I came up with basic service should include access to all critical health services, both physical and emotional, or all critical health services necessary for holistic care of the individual. I want to say it, but I don't want to say mental health. I continue to see the separation of those. That's one comment. The other comment I would have is I felt that each one of these are good principles right after the last one, which to me, you take it back, not the last one. The last one on this sheet. Conclusions about healthcare funding and policy should be as fair as possible to all stakeholders. Why do you need to say that? To me, there's some not favor one healthcare industry or stakeholder group to the detriment of the other. That's like, that's almost like.
You think that that's something we get citizens.
Just for a point of context, that came out of the original charge that I think a lot of people knew probably come out of the principle that was like you should be picking on hospitals at the detriment of doctors, but
so I mean
that, that was a standout one.
It emphasizes the disinterest rather than you got to be nice to each other.
I guess when I read that, because of my background, it's such a huge problem for me that be stumbling blocks.
You can't define fairness.
But I would also agree with you that that's probably something that making it simply just pass through to the project.
That's the point that all stakeholders are equal. Consumers are the number one stakeholder. They are to be serviced above any other stakeholder. And I mean, in this process, you know, somebody might take a little bit more than somebody else. But that's in the benefit of consumers ultimately, then that's enough.
I could wrap up my principle in there and just say decisions need to be fair, as fair as possible, and be with the ultimate goal being to promote health. It's not about the stakeholder. I mean, that kind of gets you there.
Yeah. Any objection to that change? Eliminating the last bullet, but closing in that, what Bruce has recognized, our goal to yourself.
Well, Bruce, I think your point is number six here. At least that's the way I read number six, so I don't think we need to repeat it. But actually, I think based on the history in this state, that we do need something in about balancing stakeholders. We don't have to wordsmith this to make it perfect, but I think just the idea, just because our system right now does pit different aspects against each other, pits even within the physician group, some physicians against each other. And I think this does make a point that's worthwhile for us to remember. So I think, I'm not sold any wording or anything, but I think some wording that reminds us of that is helpful.
And I'm just curious about, is the big thing around the funding mechanism. So maybe we say something in number seven, we have funding must be explicit and economically sustainable. Maybe we can flush that out a little bit to fair or, the whole world of stakeholders.
I'm a consumer on two levels. I'm a first consumer on the employer. And I'm always a consumer of health care. And I know our biggest concern, especially when we start having a discussion revolving around mandates and employer mandates, first thing that pops into my mind is they're trying to handle it then.
I have two. Back, starting with the wordsmithing on the bullet here. I guess if I'm hearing Mary Beth correctly, my concern was the use of the word funding. Because to me, the step back, if I understand, or at least my interpretation of this last bullet on the last page, is one of a fairness in the process, that everyone has a voice and a stake and an opportunity at the table, whether we wordsmith stakeholder or not. And the fact is that sometimes systems and policies that go beyond funding decisions can be gained or influenced because of one group having or one set of individuals having more authority than the other. And that all I was sensing from what we met here, and certainly personally, I believe, is just fairness in the process, that everyone has that opportunity before a decision is made as to influencing that decision and compromising the spirit of fairness. That's all. So that's a naive but so be it.
Don, how do you feel about that?
Whether you want to take the funding aspect, just put policies or processes or something like that.
I feel like even with fairness as far as
I guess my thing is, do we even need numbers?
right? I think between some of these others and number seven really talks about the funding thing. If you could flesh out a little bit four more on the fairness quotient. Because there's nothing in nine around, you know, if you wanted to find stakeholders like a business, but there's nothing in there even about employer responsibility either, right? So who are the stakeholders? I think it's, you know, we want a fair, equitable, and sustainable financing system for our healthcare delivery, right? And mobile, or whatever else you want. Any other questions?
I'm going to ask Rick Ward for a little bit for the next meeting, and I don't want to spend a lot more time on it. I mean, again, obviously most people agree what we're saying here, but there are some issues we've all brought to consider our picture of what the community is, but I'm not going to check on the next meeting.
My other thing was around two, and I kind of mentioned this, I'm sorry, I'm a little yappy today, I'm a little caffeinated, that, you know, we've this whole issue around a basic level of care and the process. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, I feel like we in the state of Oregon, went through this process of defining benefits when developing the Oregon Health Plan. And I just really am wondering if we can take that, instead of reinventing the wheel, can we take that and either build on it, figure out what's missing, and plug those holes, which might get us done, and have something to draft, and then we can tussle with the really difficult thing, which is the cash.
I agree with that. I think the other thing I was going to say is I think there should be something in our principles that acknowledges that there's going to be new money required. We have to face up to that. I recognize the system is inefficient and that there's savings to be had, but I think we're really crazy to think this can be done without.
The word I keep on going back to, and yesterday there was a long-term care in the future task force public here, and it's investment. And so without getting caught into the taxes, it's what are we willing to invest in recognition there's going to be a need for greater investment. I just wanted to play off the two also on and again, I appreciate Dr. Wolfert's point already. I think you've caught most of what my concern was, because I think of a chronic long-term care and supportive services which go far beyond the medical model. And it's not just aging, although aging is a part of it. And so I'm trying to figure out, you know, how do you capture that? I think your recommend wordsmithing may have helped at least me deal with it. But it gets back to a basic level of care around what's the intent here, independence, quality of life. I mean, what are the core values? Oregon's been touted as the national model when it comes to long-term care, home and community-based care, but it transcends that. It's what's important when it comes to quality of life. Across the lifespan. So the words the only wordsmithing I'd add on to that I hadn't heard was across the lifespan. I just maybe make it explicit. You know, we do talk and we're hearing of the incremental models and talking of children, but I'm sitting here as a consumer of an organization, 500,000 folks 50 and older, that they don't forget us.
Comments?
What, you guys need healthcare or something?
Good comments.
Yes. When Norwood starts on his doctor staff, it would be nice to know, and I don't know enough about our prioritized list and our definitions of what this means, but what is maybe missing in that addresses the mental health issue. It's sort of nice to build on what we have already today, and rather than coming up with something that's kind of new to this.
Questions?
Russ? I'm just wondering if we need to be more explicit about whether or not this work, wanting to build on a system that, for instance, the employer focus system, that this isn't intended to replace an employer-based system, but to build on top of that, or are we intending to replace that? I mean, that seems like a pretty fundamental question.
I think being a tactics as opposed to principles, and really, from my perspective, principles should be applicable to however the system is funded or delivered.
Maybe then the question would be, should it be part of that? In other words, if somebody loses employment, do they lose employment?
But that's an assumption then that it's an employer-based system. I don't think we need to make that.
But portability was covered under the universality.
Steve, do you want to say
anything? No. Well, I'll make one comment, I guess. If we were talking maybe 15, 16 years ago, I said, keep it in there because we've got to fight on hard on that issue as far as health care, and even within the Medicaid system, you get tracked prior to the Oregon Health Plan when it ran out of money halfway through the year, then there was no care. But I feel comfortable enough with an all-inclusive statement that was appropriate. I think that speaking for dentistry, and I've got a gentleman here from the OVA that maybe will speak even more than I don't have a problem when it's all-inclusive. I agree with Dr. Well, we've got to get away from the divisions within disciplines and talk about this. And so whether we mention mental health or dental specifically, you know, then why aren't we just mentioning vision or something? You know, so you get into this. I'd rather have, as long as we can recognize all the aspects of healthcare belonging there, I don't have any problems with that. I'm not sure. No, go ahead and speak your mind on that because I'm not representing the OVA here today.
Well, I agree with what you said. I think dental has been left out before, but I do feel very comfortable, at least in the last couple of years of going through sessions, that it's being included more. I don't think it needs to be stated as such. I think our goal is to talk about confidence and healthcare, so it's pretty much stated within that.
I know when you're talking about confidence and universal, it's going to be there. These are broad principles that I'm laying out here. Susan first and Mary Beth.
Well, since I was the one that asked it to be put on there, I guess I'll take the blame for it. And I agree with the goal challenge because my capacity is healthy and it's inclusive. However, I don't think it hurts, and you can live off the definition for years. I'm not wedded to the language as it's been laid onto it. But I don't think it's universally held across all of the sectors. I'm thinking of issues that I've been involved with this week with corrections health. I don't think it's universally held that healthcare services are held on confidence. I think some individuals want to do that part of decisions. I don't think it hurts if we want to rewrite this label, I think that's fine. But I just don't think it hurts for us to restate it as many times as we can. So it's like water out of a box. Someday, everybody's going to believe that taking care of kids' teeth is just as important as it's totally new part. So I think there's strong issues already. Not that I'm ready for this one.
Thank you.
Two quick things, and I mean, I just want to double check. You know, we don't explicitly say vision, but do we assume vision as half of us are sitting around here with glasses? And then the other thing on principle number one, do we need something around affordable health care or a basic level of affordable care and something around without regard to employment status?
I'm not sure about employment status.
Maybe it does.
Affordability, maybe.
I don't know. I'm just asking. It has to be affordable.
I'm not ready to close off the conversation.
Okay.
People have to listen to it.
Just one quick question. I really don't understand the word universal as it's used in the first one. I mean, it seems to me that all Oregonians should have access to basic level of care, and I didn't know what was implied with the use of universal, whether that was
means universal access. I just didn't know whether, I mean, I know what the statement says. I didn't know what universal was intended to be.
I think it's a little redundant. You probably could eliminate the word and still cover what you're trying to say. Good point.
I'm gaining on
it. Uh-oh, you guys are in trouble now.
I like the word same.
Same?
Yeah, same.
Oh, same.
But you can use that to came it out.
Same. Same or equal?
Yeah.
Equal aspects of
equal.
Right. Other four about that?
Equal to the universal. We can go on here to the degrees or splitting hairs, but we can do it. Megan?
Well, I think it's probably true that to achieve universal access, we need additional funding. I think it's also giving up on the fact that we can do something about the huge amount of waste and money that's going to non-medical services in the current system, and ignoring the fact that European countries spend half of what we do on healthcare and have better outcomes. And to me, it's just like throwing our hands up and giving up and saying, just pump our money in and not figure out the way to deliver.
I hear what Russ said. I think we understand because he is so acutely aware of where we are with Medicare. We always meditate, and he's going to fight that battle his whole life and understand. I've never been able to find out the cost of health care is going to go up compared to the people he was talking about. I have a hunch that we are not far from it. And yet, the study that we got from Kaiser, comparing the Kaiser system, which is the West Coast system, basically, to the British system, indicates that we are at that level. We offer a better product to the same price. I always thought it was the opposite. That is not true of the entire United States. We need a national figure, which I think are probably near the country where the cost is too degraded for worse outcomes than Oregon, or generally on the West Coast. Washington, Oregon, and California with extensive lower costs, better outcomes. Mary, is that correct?
Within the Kaiser system?
Within the Kaiser system. And well, the Kaiser system was particularly good for comparing because it had the data you need compared to the British system. And the sense I got from even the study with Mary Gates was costs are about the same, but outcomes for the Kaiser system are better. That's a very saying and very broadly to you and yourself, and the rest of all. Bruce.
It's going to make a process suggestion, because I think you're right. This could we could go on and on, and I think maybe what could be done is, you know, there's probably three or four principles embedded in all of this, and then there's a lot of sort of explanation about what that means, and I think that's been what a lot of the discussion has been, the clarifications about what some of all of this means, and maybe one way to just deal with this would be to over the next month maybe have, you know, Rick could maybe look at this as two or three or four principles and then a group of, you know, some kind of explanations, and we can all kind of chime in with the clarifications of what that means, and I think it just might kind of speed it along.
Yes, sir. We need to get help out. Yeah, we need to help out.
Is this Rick?
Oh, I
what
do
you have even?
Rick,
I know. These two are some vocal words. I know Rick writes that way very
well. See, but he can hit me, so I figured I'd
help it.
Right. I'll be happy to look.
On, but Dr. Hughes, obviously feel very comfortable. Well, I'm going to close this down because we've got to move on. Discussion. Just having a discussion and making us think about it probably isn't as much good as actually coming up with what we're trying to do here, because we'll get our minds to how to go forward. Do you want this meeting back over?
Well, my schedule is still extended. Do you want me to take the meeting back over, Mr. Co-Chair?
I'm trying to play her.
You're doing an excellent job. Proceed ahead. You've got the pace, the rhythm.
In the last week or two, we've tried to bring together a lot of the discussion that's gone on for the first meeting. We understand. saying that we've been talking at 100,000 feet. We've got to bring this down to ground level to the other. So today, it's down to 30,000 feet. What's the long-term goal of the next few months to actually have a chance to bring forward less than concept and get it into the ability to then continue looking at the discussion? We have a bit of a glitch in this process. The primary person we've used for years at Capitol, let's say the Council, Holly Robinson, is a wealth of knowledge, extremely bright person, has resigned her position and is now going to Washington, D.C. Her last day was today. After I threatened her life, she left. She's taken a new position in Washington, D.C. She's very excited about it. We wish her well. She's a great job. We are really going to miss her. So probably take 3 or 4 weeks to get several candidates coming up to take the position. They're well qualified, they know their stuff. And probably we should want to make 3 or 4 weeks. During this time, I really want us to hone down what's my concept so that when I look for the position, that I can go to that person or other legislators looking for that person, give them concept to start to take a deal together. And then we bring that back here. So our goal here is in the next 4 to 6 weeks we get these things out. The discussion also has been how best to approach that because this is a very broad topic. It's basically an omnibus bill we're talking about together here. About picking off number of the pieces trying to work with it. And yet, at some point, you've got to break it down to 3. And we suggested 3 potential work groups. A list of topics in each one. The topics are not exclusive. Others can be added to them. But we don't want them to be simply debated. We want them looked at, decisions made, and brought back to us. And what we're going to see here in a couple of minutes is the suggestions that I and others have put together for those groups. What we want to have is a discussion of those to actually break out today. We'll also have I've had the prerogative of the rest of the chair to a certain degree and assign some of you to groups already, which you can then take. This is not absent. And we'd like to have a discussion of work groups. This is something that the commission agrees on. The basic topics that are in those work groups and ones that we need to cover are the things we've missed, are the things that are in the long work groups. And the people we've asked to work in these groups, we'd like to know where you want to be in this group or something.
Mr. Chair, may I jump in here?
Yes.
I want to flesh this out a little bit, and it's really a compliment to everyone sitting around this table. I know last meeting we kind of said, no, we're going to all do this as individuals and not do the, never-ending series of work groups that are going to produce about what they're going to produce. So we did kind of a hybrid version of that. We decided to do a hybrid version of that and compress these work groups into this morning. And we will break up in these little subsets. The whole idea of this is just to accede to the group's wishes and passion for this subject is to accelerate it. It's part of the reason we're going to continue to do summer meetings. We feel this is an important component to getting big, broad concepts, not debate merits of every concept under, benefits or access or finance. Key comment there. You don't have to agree on all these. You don't have to, win the point. Someone puts a point up on the board and says, isn't it better? No, isn't it better to do it that way? That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is getting big, broad concepts in these specific work groups, finance, benefits, access, up on the board, then bringing them back, and we will start that discussion as a group over these subset areas today. The whole motivation here is so we do this as a group, and so we do accelerate this very aggressive schedule. Because at the end of the day, it's up to us. We will do this, and we will have legislation through the 07 session. That's what this is all about, and this is important. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Well put. You may see things here that as soon as you see it, you're going to think, can't go to them. But have the discussion. You may see things you don't like, have the discussion. And just the Massachusetts plan, you see the background of Massachusetts plan, all the things that were on the board at one time, and ultimately they dropped out. That plan is pretty awe-inspiring. They went through all the discussions, but we're not the biggest thing to do this and pull it out. I made this as inclusive as I could, but it's not complete.
And what I'll be doing is transcribe this and get it out to you. So big copy of the
Well, Rick, why don't you walk us through this while you're standing up there? I'll ask her. Huh? I'll take two. What we'll do here is walk through this and. What I'd like to have you do is, as you walk through and look at it and see all the whole program, then I want you to step back and start criticizing and say, no, that's the wrong area, this is the right area, and then go from there. So just read through and put the shoulder for three groups.
You're probably writing a minute for these groups. One is workers looking finance in the system, and under here are the bullets. One of these in a bill to make Medicare pooling a fund. And the question may be, or including state employees in that pool of bills. Would this then include all federal funds in the pool going to DHS?
First, or suggest that it just left the state.
Yeah. Early state.
My Robinson. That's not a bad idea.
Then I've got kind of provision if you can picture the bill and see like how we can maximize this and that. Simplify the system where we need to put it as well. Employee employer mandate discussed earlier, individual employee mandate. With the provision to buy into the Medicare pool by employers to employ funds and filling CSI, which might be a well robust benefit. I think Senator Sayre kind of detailed some of this out in advance, but if you're just kind of thinking, some of this might be things that come out of the work group after this meeting where you can imagine Sayre putting meat to the skeleton on the idea that it's okay. And it gives you a crowd out, and just if your crowd out is ensuring that people don't bolt from employer funds and say, yeah, the public system, how do we address that mechanism? Isn't that a payroll tax or something to make sure employers are invested in the system?
The idea being, if you consider a pay-or-play system, what's responsible for the employee and the employer in that kind of situation? If the employer does not want to buy insurance, can't buy insurance, can't get into the pool, what do you want to do that? Does the employee, as an example, be required to pick up their dependent? Or not, and what level does that happen? 30% of poverty level.
And this is just, again, if we do a financing system group, this is just to get the ball rolling. You guys can go off to work about financing, but add to the list. But not to discuss it ad nauseum for the next 2 hours, brainstorm, come back to 4 or 5 stages. That may be like your credit, but you also see the work and get the best ideas. Another work group would be benefit package.
Rick, would you like to go back to for a second? Sure. And this may not be the right place for this, but I still feel there is a spot somewhere in this that we have to talk about individual responsibility. Right now you get ready for what the gender is, what your age is. I've always been concerned about that. We're all going to have our genders, well, our ages are going to change. But we don't rate people for smoking, for obesity, things people really have a choice over.
You know, I'm not talking about alcoholism. I'm not talking about mental health. I mean, people don't have as much choice there as you might think. But those two issues are big. And right now, if you go to buy a car insurance, they rate you on smoking. And they ask you to smoke or not, and that affects your premium for your car insurance because they know the risks associated with it. We've never done that in healthcare. There's no sense of responsibility for the individual. And the only way you only get there, as far as I'm concerned, is in the pocketbook. So I wanted that to get into discussion.
Something about your tutor, you might question, you know, that belongs under another section, or that's redundant. That's okay. I mean, just because you don't want to try to undo the case and decide to belong one place or another, just get it down. About that. The benefit package delivery system group, setting up with me basically the things always be our people is going to cross the fact that it's going to drive support and support to protect those gathering of the best part of what considered adequate for service. Paying food for primary prevention.
I wrote down from notes myself. There's actually discussion at the federal level on this very issue. And they're thinking of that primary and preventive services would be some of the 25% bump, and that subspecialty services and intervention services actually get a reduction of 50% to balance it out. Trying to put the money up front to prevent some of it happening. It's a huge shift in how we do things.
So I think the groups break out and they're brainstorming. They shouldn't be debating, but make sure we have enough on the board to actually so we know later we get past what's that to clarify. And that's okay to do.
This is benefit package delivery system and payment as opposed to finance.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, yes, no.
I mean, okay.
Reimbursement.
Yeah.
I think Rick made a really good point in the last meeting. He said you don't pay for it. And you get what you're going to put the money into. And right now, we're figuring out all the high tech at the end. And I can say, well, we have a sense we're putting more there than we are at the other end. Remember the study we had that showed at a certain point as the high tech goes up, as the subspecialty care goes up, morbidity and mortality starts going the wrong direction. There's a point that is not as we brought into control.
And under that same bullet or separate is a point evidence based services treatment. Is that a part of the system? The increase for eyes, text, imaging, and other services value. There's any number of things that we pay for. What we're paying for what and how we have to talk. We have to connect with prescription drug RX, some ideas, both purchasing tool, formulary, the drug we know kind of carries, and then on the benefit tag, more transparency, including hospitals, providers, and insurers, so it's kind of under the umbrella of what you're doing, how to do it,
cost, and quality, kind of thing. Yes.
Make sure, I think you go, let's recapture that in your piece, so that's the best thing. There'll be a lot of opportunities if you're not even there, it's easier to get a successful career.
Continuing that benefit package delivery, contractor teams, hospital, surgery centers,
we'll be looking at the discussion earlier, making sure it's comprehensive. A third work group with the payment system.
Payment isn't. Okay.
I guess in there, who administers of the payment system? Uniform, deductibles, prior authorization. For anybody here, I get just who approves payment within the prescription drug procedure. The referral process, billing form, basic provider, the uniform system,
IT in the system, interoperability that IT did part of the process of last year, and did the bill just include, well, how does it include looking at promoting high tech now system that makes points? But I think and I think Roger T. has cost, used to get cost containment, they run across all the different
areas. These are all intermixed. There's no way it can separate them out. Well, I tried to do it in a way, and with the help of others, it made some sense for people to focus down. Continuing a huge group of discussion, I didn't think it would actually get where we wanted to be. And so I put a focus together of something I thought would be worthwhile, and Rick helped me, and Ben helped me. Give me your first install point. Is this kind of where you want to go? Is this something we can work with, knowing that we're going to have to keep talking to each other outside this issue at the beginning of all time? And what I envisioned for this was to break the day for an hour or two, talk over the issues with your group, bring it back, have a group discussion again. And then either by phone or other method you can do, you see that discussion between now and the next meeting and bring it back together. Is that something that's doable? Is it a process that will work? Is it, you know, a process you don't like? I mean, I debated this back and forth for the last 2 weeks of either staying in the group and discussing these issues or breaking them out. And finally convinced this is the best way to go. So give me some feedback. How do you feel about this? Or do you want to stay together?
Let's get a quick clarification. What the goal would be of each work group? I mean, what would be the expectation?
I would like them to have come back with recommendations for legislative coordination. We think this is the way to go. I'll take one of the hot items. I would assume is going to be, you know, payroll tax. You know, funding. Okay, funding. And that comes right into it, you know. Can we buy into a pool as employers? How much do our employees take on? How much do we take on? What are those costs for those? Do we really need a mandate in this situation here? Do we need a mandate for our employees' families? How do you feel about it? Okay.
And I think that to solve a group question, this is the beginning of a list to add to the list. And not so much get in there and discuss each item that exists, but to start adding, maybe come back with 3 or 4 or 5 more cases. Just brainstorming, getting at that point. And then
I have to make an assumption that Maine must go down through a similar process. They didn't just, you know, establish 20 people and say, this is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Someone has to balance it.
It seems like the lists are focused more on the how rather than what. And it seems to me the first ask is, what is broaden it to specifics, and then it's the how. Much of the list seems to be focused on the how before we move forward.
And I'll try to answer your question. In my mind, from the discussion we've had so far, is that every Oregonian have access for basic health care. I think we all agree to achieve that in a way that we can afford to go immediately to, as you just brought up, the how. I'll give you my own bias, let's just maybe hear it now, you might as well hear it now and get it over with. I don't believe that the program is ready for it, nor am I opposed to the single-payer health care system in the state. I see too many pitfalls to it. I might be going all the reasons for the dedicated program is not there. I believe we have tools available to us, some of which are really kind of revolutionary, that can get us where we need to get to, which is what? Access to the basic health care everywhere we're going. And that basic health care, I believe, is the one that is on top of the health distribution. We have programs that are substantially the same as the benefit package for OHP. We can achieve that in a affordable fashion for everyone going, that's what we want to do. That's the question I want.
Frank, is that answer correct or not?
Yeah. Well, I think the work groups will deal inclusively with all of this.
In other words, if you have one group working on the how, but another group working on the what, kind of a thing. What's the plan?
I'm hoping that each group, as they go through the specific issues they're looking at, are thinking this is the what is how do we get to access the basic plan for everybody. All these things in the mix. I mean, we artificially separate, we might admit that, artificially separate, just so we can get the work done. But I fully realize you can pull one piece out, you're actually pulling something else. So that was my delight in setting this up.
I like this model. The Senate decided to focus on comprehensive universal health care for children because, and probably the governor this way too, because we know we can find some funding source, this is the cheapest way to start. And that's why we know we could get a child health agenda through the legislature. But if we work out the specifics of what is here, it's very easy to expand families into it. So if we can solve this issue, I think we have so much more possibility for expanding child health, the universal child health, to a lot more people. So I would love to address it in this one.
I think the really discussion came at the center was that some of this by testing will still be at the 100,000 foot level. Hopefully some of this is narrowed down to 20 and 30 and 10 details, and some will fall by the wayside. Like you think for people that just maybe people are doable, I think that's the fact that all these things happen to be filled in the end of the day.
Right or wrong, we're not going to go in. They're not going to come out of the workers today. This is it. This is the beginning of the really important discussion. I also kind of feel that we've reached the point that our knowledge base is large enough. We know where we're going. We have a pretty good concept of what the drivers for cost are. We're keeping the barriers up for putting people in the system and trying to move, take down our knowledge as fast. From that point, I'm pushing us towards direction. Are there other comments about this? Others who agree or disagree?
I agree.
Thank you, Ralph.
Okay.
Carl?
Yeah. Okay. I don't think there's any exact approach that's going to work, so and we could all sit in here and keep discussing this all the time. But
let's go ahead and break it down. Let's give it a shot.
Yeah. And
I think this is as good as anywhere to start. There's two. I just want to ask a question. I mean, our financing and our reimbursement systems don't just pay for healthcare services. And there's two specifically that I just would like to know where they will be discussed. One is education, and it just comes from the National Workforce Meeting. Our reimbursement system pays for education, and would that be considered somewhere? And the other aspect is liability.
I think my first sense would be under the finance system. It's something I had not thought of or remembered to place in there, and that's something that should be placed in that area. That's the kind of stuff that's come back and say, hey, what do you think about we forgot this, or you think about this, we did this, you think this is the best approach. Okay. I actually have it in there. I took it out because supposed to leave your baggage at the door. So I was leaving that baggage. It actually was on my list.
I need to get health care.
Well, then I don't know what you're doing.
I had it in there, but I pulled it out. Specifically, for things I felt like it was in my own bag. At the door. Okay, so yeah. I got enough of my stuff in the people to close out the door. But if the work group cleaned it up, I can accept it, okay? Other questions? I'm gonna suggest some areas to go to for different individuals. I'm gonna do this one by one, and I want you to say yay or nay. I want to go there. I don't want to go there. From the benefit package delivery, Rick, did you?
He left.
Yeah. Okay, that's going down.
He's a moving target.
Ken Allen's not here. Megan, would you be interested in working on the benefit delivery package?
I'd be happy to go wherever. I feel like I'd be better in financing.
We'll move you over to finance. Okay?
Mary and Beth? Beth and Package Delivery? Susan? Beth and Package Delivery? Okay with that? And you can change groups anytime. Like, this is not like, you know, Mother told you what to do. Package Delivery?
What's that?
Benefit Package and Delivery?
If possible, I might put Wes on that, the benefit, and I do the finance. That's my background.
Fine.
Just delivery.
That's fine. Norwood, you okay with Benefit Package and Delivery?
Oh, I'll get more. Okay.
I am curious if mental health specific to be up to sub
package and delivery is, I mean, actually, if Dove tells you what we're asking you to do, okay.
We can help you get your work done.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Bruce, how about benefit package delivery for your business? Okay.
I'm fine anywhere you want.
All the best.
Also,
what a man. Russ, same group. Okay. Okay. Because the hospital med, transparency, the financing system. Mike, okay with that? Mike. Jan. Jared?
Although I have to admit, I'd also, my expertise would actually fit better with a benefit package.
You ready to go to benefit? I'm going to go to benefit. John? Financial? What's the financial connection to see what's under that? Okay. Want to think about it?
I think I'd be better in the benefit package.
Thank you, you're okay with this, right? You're okay with finance. You have to go there. Carl?
You might just buy yourself.
You definitely have to go. Carl, you go there? Thank you. The payment system is kind of an odd duck. Very important to some of us. Mary?
Yeah.
And I'm going to be there with you.
Okay.
We may be only two or three of us there, but this is almost too much nuts and bolts, but we have to talk about this. And I really was almost wanting Mike to come over with us. We're losing money on the side, too. I need someone from the insurers here to talk about it. I could use Jan here, too. But, how about you and I talk about it? Who did I miss? The legislators, I did not presume to place any groups. I wanted you to self-select.
My first
job. Yeah. I need your vote. So you just think about what you want to do as well.
Oh, probably the financial.
Okay. I'll talk to you later. Have I failed to assign anybody? Comfortable as much as you can be for this? Okay. Each group is going to have a clerical help. Senator Morse, thank you very much for the package.
Steve
is going to go to the group, and I'm going to ask him to go to finance with you. Okay. And you're going to take the benefit? You're going to take service already. Like you're with me on payment systems, okay?
A couple things real quick. Let me, because you're attracted with Lenny, you don't have a form in one work group or we can't do that. So if we go off your group, you just can't have a majority of the members there. So
10 or less
is okay. The center's going to have to stand at ease from this meeting, and then we'll go off and do work group, which takes us out of the public meeting mode. We don't have to report it now.
Another thing also, I'm hoping we haven't got 10 in benefits, but I don't think we do. The other issue is if members of the audience want to take part in this group, it's up to the individual groups to make that decision, but I would welcome that participation. Any questions? We have lunch at what, 11:30? Rick? What's lunch on?
11:30. Oh, but it'll come in at 11:30, so it'll be noon when we come back.
It's already here.
How do you feel about breaking for lunch and then getting the group?
Yeah.
11:45, 12, how about 12? There's a 45-minute break or something. Which rooms are available and which rooms are available?
We have Mary Durham's conference room.
I would suggest
Mary Durham's living room.
It's a smaller room, so I would suggest it's the Senator Bates.
We just had our
On a clarification on the benefits, are we assuming that all of the restrictions or requirements of the public program are in place?
No. We want concepts here. I realize much of this, a lot of things in this board up here are clearly at this point needed. We're going to have to get waivers for them or find a way to do that. That is our job as far as legislative council is concerned. We may have to come back again. When we started OHP out, it was an illegal program. It took us 2 years to get waivers.
Senator, one thing you talked about earlier, too, is during the course of these work groups, from now on until the mission ends, a work group might come up with a good short-term fix legislative concept that could be proposed to something, you know, something that could be drafted early. So don't overlook the fact that there might be an idea here that could be floated early in drafting. Sometimes those things are floated early in combined joint meetings as well.
And an example of that, I previously asked LC what would happen now to the UP in place. I wanted to get a picture and really help you with the Dallas Police Department, I think.
Yes.
We want to get a picture of where are the maximums bid in Medicaid across the board for all the different categories as far as what federal poverty level can go up to. We know it's probably 200 for the CHIP program for kids. I want to know where it is for pregnant women, what it is for OHP standard population, for all of them. We may have one piece that will come up fairly saying that we want to map all these programs out. Here's the cost of it. Have that ready to go. Because that would fit right into what we're doing. There might be, you know, it might even say something of the nature, and we would bring it back for commission to discussion. 100% below your own Medicaid, 200% in TEOP. There's ways of looking at this. But that's a short-term thing that's probably within the grasp of what's the legal amount, and not politically cost, but ways to reach the legal. Will include mental health and drug and alcohol and that kind of a program. So that's kind of stuff that short things we brought forward. The other picture is more long term. Even if we were able to get everything through the legislature, signed by the governor, and so uncomfortable. And then it would have to go to the federal level, or we'd have to do waivers for a lot of it. It would have to be something that goes through our supplier delegation at the federal level, and there's all kinds of issues involved. But those are the two tracks that we're on. Okay?
Logistics-wise, sorry, you said you two. Anybody in the audience, since we'll be adjourning for a public meeting, I think you're welcome to follow a work group if there's room in there to observe, but these have to be public meetings. So,
as far as I'm concerned, the work groups take a decision about how much intake they want to get from the audience. I want to ask that we start our work groups at 12, we complete them at 1:30, we come back at 1:30, and wrap up by 2:50. I really want to keep these meetings on time. I feel if you don't do that, it burns people out. They won't want to come again, and I wouldn't do it. Yeah, I know you start the weekend, I know you got things to do. I want everybody out here by 2:50. And I frankly have to find out this morning, but I know it does have people who want to make this week.
So, let me be clear. We're
going to
take a break right now. Okay, because let me do it. did describe where each of the unions will be held. The benefits package is going to be in here. The financing system is going to be near, as you approach the front door of the building, turn right, and we'll put a little sign out there or something. It's the conference room that's immediately left. So, toward the front door, turn right into the reception area, and there's a conference room just on your left. And then the payment system would be in my office, and we'll just...
We are in recess.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.